Welcome to the True Crime Never Sleeps podcast. We dive into stories of true crime, from unsolved cold cases to historic kidnapping to gangsters and beyond. We are your source for true crime. We thank you for listening.
Imagine a seemingly perfect family, a respected father, a loving mother, and four bright, promising children living in an idyllic home in the heart of France. They were the picture of normalcy, loved by their neighbors and active in their community. But one day, they vanished without a trace, leaving behind a mystery so dark, so twisted, that would captivate and haunt an entire nation for years to come. What could drive a man to murder his entire family in cold blood, and then disappear as if he never existed? How does a father go from being a pillar of his family to the most wanted man in France? These are the chilling questions that surround the case of Javier Dupont de Ligonnès, a case filled with secrets, deception, and unanswered questions. In this episode, we're going to dive deep into the shocking story of the Dupont de Ligonnès family murders and the ongoing mystery of Javier's disappearance. We'll explore the possible motives behind this unthinkable crime, dissect the intricate details of the investigation, and examine the theories that continue to baffle both experts and armchair detectives alike. Could new evidence finally crack the case wide open, or will this remain one of the greatest unsolved mysteries of our time? Stick around, because what we uncovered might just change everything you thought you knew about this haunting case. Hello and welcome to the True Crime Never Sleeps podcast, part of the Highwire Media Network. This week on Cold Case Friday, we dive into the Dupont de Ligonnès family murders. Before we do that, give us a thumbs up if you like our video, hit the subscribe button down below, and leave a comment in the comment section below on your thoughts of this case. Without further ado, let's dive right into today's episode. Javier Pierre-Marie Dupont de Ligonnès was born on January 9, 1961, into an aristocratic family with deep roots in French nobility. Dupont de Ligonnès family traced their lineage back to the French aristocracy, a heritage that came with both privilege and a sense of obligation. Javier was raised in a household that valued tradition, status, and the preservation of their noble lineage. His parents, Bernard Hubert and Genevieve Dupont de Ligonnès, were devout Catholics who instilled in Javier a strong sense of faith, something that would play a complex role throughout his life. Growing up, Javier's life was marked by the expectations of nobility, yet his upbringing was not without its challenges. The family was not as wealthy as their aristocratic title might suggest, and there was always undercurrents of financial strain. This dichotomy between the expectations of high society and the reality of their financial situation left a lasting impression on Javier. His parents emphasized the importance of education, though Javier's academic journey was unremarkable. He attended a series of Catholic schools, where he was known more for his charm and charisma than for academic excellence. Despite these pressures, Javier developed a strong sense of identity tied to his noble heritage. He was proud of his family's history, even as he struggled to find his own place in a rapidly changing world. His early years were also shaped by a deepening religious faith, one that would influence many of his later decisions, both personal and professional. As Javier transitioned into adulthood, he carried with him the weight of his family's expectations. He pursued various career paths, though none seemed to offer the success or stability he sought. Javier's career was a patchwork of entrepreneurial ventures, from managing small businesses to dabbling in real estate. He never settled into a single profession, instead moving from one opportunity to the next, often in pursuit of the financial success that eluded him. These ventures were largely unsuccessful, which added to his growing sense of frustration and failure. In his personal life, Javier married, apologies if I get this name wrong, Agnes Haldanger, 1990, a woman whose devout Catholicism mirrored his own upbringing. He was known to be deeply religious, often attending church services and being involved in religious activities. Their marriage, though outwardly stable, was far from perfect. Friends and acquaintances would later describe it as a union fraught with underlying tensions, largely due to Javier's financial instability and frequent absences from home. The couple had four children together, Arthur, Thomas, Anne, and Benoit. Javier was also known to be a devout father, deeply involved in his children's lives. He took pride in their achievements, and was seen by many as a caring and attentive parent. However, his relationship with his wife and children was complicated. While he was affectionate, there was also a sense of detachment, as if he were constantly preoccupied with the burden of his failures and the weight of his responsibilities. Financial strains that plagued Javier's family during his childhood continued to haunt him in his adult life. His ventures often ended in disappointment, and the pressure to provide for his family became an ever-present stressor. Despite these challenges, Javier maintained an image of stability and control, never allowed the outside world to see the cracks that were beginning to form in his carefully constructed life. For those who knew them, the Lagonis family appeared to be the epitome of a traditional upper-middle-class French family, living in a...
While the world whizzes by, enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Comfortable home in Nantes, they were a familiar presence in their community. The family was deeply involved in their local parish, regularly attending church services and participating in religious activities. Agnes, in particular, was well known for her piety and was often seen as the spiritual backbone of the family. Neighbors and friends described the family as polite, reserved, and somewhat private. They were not overly social, but they maintained cordial relationships with those around them. Javier, with his aristocratic bearing and charming demeanor, was seen as an enigmatic figure, courteous and friendly, yet somewhat distant. He did not easily open up to others, and there was a sense that he kept much of his life and struggles to himself. Children ranging in age from their late teens to early adolescence were described as well-mannered and academically inclined. Arthur, the eldest, was attending a prestigious Catholic school, while Thomas was pursuing studies in music. Anne and Benoit were both active in school and church activities, with bright futures seemingly ahead of them. Despite the outward appearance of normalcy, there were subtle signs that not everything was as it seemed. Some neighbors noted that Javier was often away on business trips, leaving Agnes to manage the household on her own. Others remarked on the family's financial difficulties, which were hinted at in conversations but never openly discussed. Agnes confided in a few close friends about her worries, particularly about the family's financial situation and Javier's increasingly erratic behavior. In retrospect, these were all signs that the family was under significant strain, though few could have imagined the tragedy that would soon unfold. The Lagonis family, with the aura of mystery and quiet reserve, would soon become the focus of one of France's most shocking and enduring mysteries, a case that would leave neighbors, friends, and an entire nation searching for answers. Murders of the DuPont de Lagonis family are among the most meticulously executed and haunting crimes in recent French history. The victims were all members of the same family: Agnes, the mother, and her four children, Arthur, Thomas, Anne, and Benoit. Each of these murders was carried out with chilling precision, suggesting not just a moment of madness, but a calculated plan that had been in the making for some time. Exact details of how each family member was killed and killed remain somewhat speculative, but investigators believe that Javier began by drugging his family. This is inferred from the lack of struggle or signs of resistance in the crime scene. The sedative used is thought to be a common sleeping pill, easily obtained without raising suspicion. Once the family members were unconscious, Javier is believed to have used a .22 caliber rifle, a small but deadly firearm that can kill at close range with a little noise. The use of this specific rifle is particularly significant. It was a family heirloom, adding a deeply personal element to the crime. Each victim was shot in the head or chest at close range. The children, all of whom are still young and in various stages of adolescence, were found with no signs of defensive wounds, suggesting that they were completely unaware of the danger before they were killed. The family's dog, too, was shot and buried alongside them, a grim indication of the complete eradication of the family unit. After killing his family, Javier methodically wrapped each body in a blanket, placing small religious icons with some of them. These details point to a complex psychological state where Javier may have viewed these acts as a twisted form of protection or redemption for his victims. The burial itself was not less disturbing. He dug shallow graves beneath the garden terrace, a place they had once enjoyed as a family, perhaps symbolizing a desire to keep them close, even in death. The murders remained undetected for nearly 2 weeks, largely due to Javier's efforts to cover his tracks. During this period, he sent emails and letters from his wife and children's accounts, creating an elaborate ruse that they had left suddenly for the United States. This level of deception delayed the discovery of the crime and allowed Javier to make his escape. The timeline leading up to the murders paints a picture of a man increasingly desperate and determined to follow through with a horrific plan. In March 2011, in the weeks leading up to the murders, Javier's financial situation had become dire. He was facing significant debts from failed business ventures, and it became apparent that he was unable to maintain the lifestyle that he and his family were accustomed to. Javier, who had always prided himself on providing for his family, was now facing the reality that he had failed them. And then, sometime late March 2011, during this time, Javier began making a series of unusual purchases. He buys large amounts of quicklime, cement, a shovel, and plastic sheeting, items that would later be used in the burial of his family. He also cancels several appointments and memberships, indication that he was methodically severing ties with his current life. And then early April 2011, Javier's behavior becomes increasingly secretive. He withdraws large sums of cash, possibly to fund his disappearance, and spends considerable time alone, away from the family home. He also begins sending out misleading messages claiming that the family would soon be relocating to the U.S. These messages serve to buy him time and reduce suspicion in the days following the murders. And then from April 3rd to the 5th of 2011, it's during this time that investigators believe the murders took place. The exact timing is unclear, but it is thought that Javier killed his wife first, possibly on April 3rd, then proceeded to kill each of his children over the next 2 days. The methodical nature of the killing spread out over several days indicates a chilling level of control and premeditation. Following the murders, Javier continues to maintain the appearance of normalcy. He uses his family's email accounts to send messages to schools, employers, and friends, claiming they had left for the United States due to a sudden job opportunity. During this time, he also settles his affairs, including paying off debts and closing accounts, suggesting that he was preparing for his own disappearance. And then on April 15th, 2011, Javier is last seen checking out of a budget hotel in the south of France. He's captured on CCTV, only leaving the premises, carrying a large bag. This is the last confirmed sighting of him, and it marks the beginning of his disappearance, which continues to baffle investigators to this day. The method used in the DuPont de Ligonnès murders was as cold and calculated as it was brutal. What shocked the nation most was the sheer premeditation and precision involved in the killings. Javier's use of a .22 caliber rifle, a relatively quiet and precise weapon, suggested a deliberate choice to minimize noise and ensure that his family could be killed quickly and efficiently. The fact that he killed them in their sleep or while they were sedated added to the horror. These were not acts of passion, but executions carried out with a chilling detachment. The brutality of the crime also lies in its psychological aspects. The fact that Javier buried his family in the garden of their home, a place associated with safety and comfort, was particularly disturbing. This act of burying his loved ones in their own backyard, beneath the terrace where they had once spent happy moments together, had an element of macabre symbolism that deeply unsettled the public. Moreover, the religious elements present at the crime scene, small crosses and rosaries placed with some of the bodies, suggested a twisted attempt at seeking absolution or perhaps a deluded belief that he was saving his family from something worse. The blending of deep religious symbolism with cold-blooded murder created a narrative that was both tragic and horrifying, leaving a lasting impact on the French collective consciousness. Meticulous planning combined with the use of deception after the murders highlighted a level of control that was terrifying in its execution. Javier's ability to maintain his composure even as he orchestrated the deaths of his entire family challenged the very notion of what could drive a person to commit such an atrocity. It wasn't just the death that shocked the nation, but the realization that a man could harbor such darkness while appearing outwardly normal. The discovery of the bodies was a pivotal moment in the DuPont de Ligonnès case, one that transformed what was initially a missing persons investigation into a full-blown murder case that captivated the nation. On April 21st, 2011, after growing concerns from relatives who had not heard from the family, for weeks the police were called to the Ligonnès home in Nantes to conduct a welfare check. The house was eerily quiet, with no signs of life, but nothing appeared amiss on the surface. Inside, the rooms were clean, and many personal items had been packed away, as if the family was preparing for a move. The police initially found no obvious signs of a struggle or foul play. However, as the investigation continued, officers noted some freshly disturbed earth beneath the terrace in the garden. This was an unusual and suspicious discovery, especially given the lack of any clear explanation for the family's sudden disappearance. Acting on their instincts, the police began to dig. What they uncovered was a scene of unimaginable horror. Buried in shallow graves, wrapped carefully in blankets, were the bodies of Agnes and the four children. Each body was laid out in a neat row, and as the investigators unearthed them, the reality of the situation began to sink in. These were not missing persons. They were victims of a horrific crime. The discovery was immediately relayed to higher authorities, and a full forensic team was brought in to analyze the scene. Careful burial and the presence of religious artifacts pointed to a killer who was methodical and deeply conflicted, possibly seeking redemption through these final acts. Reaction from the authorities was one of shock and urgency. A nationwide alert was issued for Javier Dupont de Leganés, who was now the prime suspect. However, by this time, Javier had already vanished, leaving behind only traces of his methodical planning in a family that had been destroyed. Public reaction was equally intense. News of the discovery spread rapidly, dominating headlines across France and beyond. The sheer brutality of the crime, combined with the mystery of Javier's disappearance, gripped the nation. People were horrified by the idea that such a crime could occur within the walls of a seemingly normal home, carried out by a man who had, until then, managed to maintain the appearance of a devoted husband and father. In the days and weeks that followed, the Leganés home became a focal point for media attention and public curiosity. The neighbors, who had known the family and never suspected anything was wrong, were left reeling. How could such a tragedy have unfolded right next door without anyone noticing? The discovery of the bodies marked the beginning of one of France's most enduring mysteries, a case that continues to haunt those who seek answers to the chilling question of what really happened to Javier Dupont de Leganés and why he chose to destroy his family in such a brutal and calculated manner. The last confirmed sighting of Javier Dupont de Leganés was on April 15th, 2011, in the small, picturesque town of, apologies for probably butchering all these names, but Roquebrune-sur-Argens, located in the Var department of the province Alpes-Côte d'Azur region in southeastern France. The area is known for its rugged terrain, dense forests, and the mountains, making it an ideal location for someone looking to disappear. On that day, Javier was spotted leaving the Hotel Formula One, a budget hotel where he had been staying for a few days. Surveillance footage captured him walking out of the hotel with a large shoulder bag, looking calm and composed. There was nothing in his demeanor that suggested he was a man on the run after committing such heinous crimes. This image has since become iconic, representing the last known trace of a man who has soon become the subject of one of France's most extensive manhunts. What makes this sighting particularly significant is its location. The area is surrounded by wilderness, with the nearby Massif des Morts offering a labyrinth of trails, caves, and dense vegetation. The environment is challenging to navigate and could easily conceal someone determined to avoid detection. The fact that Javier chose this area as his last known location suggests that he may have planned his disappearance with great care, taking advantage of the terrain to either go into hiding or stage his next move. Once the bodies of Agnes and the children were discovered on April 21st, 2011, French authorities wasted no time in launching a nationwide manhunt for Javier. Given the brutal nature of the murders and Javier's sudden disappearance, he was immediately classified as the prime suspect. The initial phase of the search focused on the area around where Javier was last seen. The police quickly mobilized search teams, including specialized units experienced in tracking individuals in rugged terrain. Helicopters equipped with thermal imaging cameras scanned the dense forests and mountain areas, hoping to detect any sign of life that might indicate Javier's presence. On the ground, search dogs trained in tracking human scents were deployed to follow any potential trails, while teams of officers combed through the area on foot, checking every cave, abandoned building, and potential hiding spot. Despite these extensive efforts, the search in the immediate vicinity yielded no results. There were no traces of Javier, no discarded belongings, no footprints, no signs of a campsite, nothing to indicate where he might have gone after leaving the hotel. This lack of evidence led some to speculate that Javier might have planned his disappearance with military-like precision, possibly even mapping out escape routes or having prearranged transportation. As the search in the area drew a blank, the focus shifted to a broader nationwide effort. International arrest warrant was issued, and Javier's face was plastered on wanted posters across France and beyond. French police worked in conjunction with Interpol and law enforcement agencies in other countries, particularly in Spain and Italy, where it was believed Javier might attempt to flee. Despite numerous reported sightings, both within France and internationally, none were conclusively verified. Javier's ability to evade capture led to widespread speculation about whether he had received assistance or had managed to create a new identity for himself, blending into society undetected. So now you might be asking, did Javier plan his disappearance? And what evidence suggests he might still be alive? Because, I mean, after all this time, he's probably dead, right? Well, there is substantial evidence suggesting that Javier Dupont de Leganés meticulously planned his disappearance, possibly even before he carried out the murders. The evidence points to a man who is methodical, resourceful, and determined to vanish without a trace. In the weeks leading up to the murders, Javier made several calculated moves that indicate premeditation. He withdrew significant amounts of cash from his bank accounts, would allow him to survive off the grid without relying on traceable electronic transactions. This action is particularly telling as it suggests that Javier was preparing to disappear in a way that would leave no digital footprint, a crucial element in avoiding detection in the modern world. Moreover, Javier's decision to abandon his car in a public parking lot raises further questions about his plans. Some speculate that this was a deliberate misdirection meant to throw investigators off his trail. By leaving the car in a location where it would eventually be found, Javier may have intended to create the impression that he had fled into the nearby wilderness, while in reality, he could have arranged for alternative transportation to take him elsewhere. Additionally, the fact that no body has ever been found strongly suggests that Javier could still be alive. He had intended to commit suicide, as some have speculated. It's likely that his body would have been discovered during the extensive searches conducted in the area. The absence of any conclusive evidence of his death leads many to believe that Javier successfully executed his plan to disappear, possibly with the aid of a network or accomplice who helped him establish a new identity. Over the years, there have been sporadic reports of sightings of Javier in various countries, including Italy, Spain, and even as far as South America. While none of these sightings have been definitively confirmed, they continue to fuel speculation that Javier is alive, living under an assumed identity. The possibility that he may have changed his appearance, perhaps through plastic surgery, or by adopting a drastically different lifestyle, also cannot be ruled out. We're going to take a look at some of the theories on his whereabouts and possible locations where he could have fled, both in and outside of France. Javier Dupont de Ligonnès' disappearance has given rise to multiple theories regarding his possible whereabouts. These theories range from plausible scenarios grounded in evidence to more speculative ideas that have captured the public's attention. Starting off with, he's hiding in the wilderness of southern France. One of the most straightforward theories is that Javier remains hidden somewhere in the rugged terrain of southern France, particularly in the Massif des Marais mountains on the surrounding wilderness. The area where he was last seen is vast and difficult to search thoroughly, with numerous caves, forests, and remote locations where some potentially live undetected for years. Given Javier's methodical nature, he may have prepared for such a possibility by stashing supplies or finding a secluded spot where he could remain out of sight. And number two, he possible escape to a foreign country. Another leading theory is that Javier managed to leave France shortly after abandoning his car. With the cash he withdrew and his knowledge of European geography, he could have easily crossed into a neighboring country like Spain or Italy, where he could disappear into the large expatriate communities or rural areas. If he had forged documents or received help from an accomplice, he might have also been able to board a ferry or a flight to a more distant location, possibly in Africa, South America, or Southeast Asia, where French nationals are less likely to attract attention. And number three, living under an assumed identity. Some believe that Javier is living under a new identity, having meticulously planned every detail of his escape. This theory posits that he could have acquired false documents, possibly with the help of a criminal network, or through black market channels. With these new papers, Javier could be living in a different part of Europe, or even further afield, working in a low-profile job, or living a reclusive lifestyle that minimizes his chances of being recognized. This theory is supported by the fact that there has been no confirmed sightings of him using his real identity since his disappearance. Number four, assisted by a secret network. Another intriguing theory is that Javier might have received assistance from a secreted group or individual. This could be someone with resources and connections capable of helping him disappear without leaving a trace. There are rumors that Javier had connections in the business world or among the aristocracy, which could have provided him with the means to create a new life. If this is the case, Javier might be living in a safe house or a remote estate, protected by those who helped him escape. Number five, faked his own death. More speculative theories suggest that Javier might have faked his own death to throw authorities off his trail. This would require an elaborate ruse, such as staging a suicide in a way that ensures his body is never found, or planting misleading evidence to suggest he perished in the wilderness. If Javier went to such lengths, he could have used the confusion surrounding his supposed death to slip away unnoticed, either by assuming a new identity or retreating into a secluded location. Number six, joining a religious group, religious or cult community. Given Javier's strong religious convictions, some have speculated that he might have sought refuge in a religious community or cult that operates outside mainstream society. Such communities, particularly those in rural or isolated areas, could offer him the anonymity and protection he needs to evade capture. Javier joined a group with strict privacy or security measures. It could explain why he has remained undetected for so long. Despite the many theories, Javier Dupont de Leganés' disappearance remains one of the most enduring mysteries in modern French history. Lack of concrete evidence and the failure to locate him, dead or alive, continue to fuel speculation about where he might be, whether he will ever be found. Until then, his fate remains a tantalizing enigma, captivating those who follow the case and leaving investigators with more questions than answers. Investigation in the Dupont de Leganés case began with forensic examination of the family home in Nantes. This examination revealed crucial details about how the murders were carried out and provided a foundation for understanding the extent of Javier's planning and psychological state. The forensic team's first priority was to determine how the murders had been committed. Autopsies confirmed that each victim had been shot with a .22 caliber rifle at close range. Like we previously mentioned, the specific use of this weapon, a family heirloom, pointed to a personal and calculated choice by the perpetrator. There was no sign of a struggle in the house, leading investigators to believe that the victims were either drugged or killed while they slept. Toxicology reports were inconclusive regarding sedation, but the lack of defensive wounds supported the theory that the victims were incapacitated at the time of the shootings. Another key forensic discovery is the state of the burial site under the garden terrace. The graves had been meticulously dug, and the bodies were placed with care, wrapped in blankets and accompanied by religious artifacts like small crosses. This suggested that Javier was not only methodical, but also deeply conflicted, perhaps believing that these symbolic acts could offer some form of redemption or absolution for his crimes. Witness testimonies played a critical role in piecing together the timeline of events leading up to and following the murders. Neighbors reported hearing nothing unusual in the days when the murders likely occurred, which aligned with the theory that the killings were carried out silently and with great care. Friends and acquaintances of the family described Javier as increasingly withdrawn in the months leading up to the crime. Several noted that Javier had expressed feelings of failure and financial despair, which may have contributed to his decision to kill his family. Another significant testimony came from a former classmate of Thomas, one of the children who recalled a conversation where Thomas mentioned his father's recent purchase of the .22 caliber rifle. This, combined with other witness statements about Javier's erratic behavior, further solidified his position as the primary suspect. Beyond the physical evidence, investigators gathered numerous clues that painted a picture of Javier's meticulously planning. These included his financial transactions, particularly the large withdrawals of cash that indicated he was preparing to live off the grid. Investigators also discovered that Javier had canceled many of his subscriptions and sold personal items in the weeks leading up to the murders, actions that suggested he was methodically severing ties with his previous life. One intriguing clue was the discovery of letters sent by Javier to friends and family after the murders. In these letters, he claimed that the family had moved to the U.S. as part of a secret government mission, a bizarre and unbelievable story that nevertheless delayed the discovery of the bodies by several days. These letters demonstrated Javier's ability to manipulate those around him, further complicating the investigation. The investigation into Javier Dupont de Leganés' disappearance faced numerous challenges, many of which have contributed to the case remaining unsolved. One of the primary challenges was the geographical complexity of the area where Javier was last seen. The rugged mountainous terrain of the Massif des Marais, with its dense forests and numerous hiding places, made it extremely difficult for search teams to thoroughly cover the area. Despite extensive efforts, including the use of helicopters and search dogs, the possibility that Javier might have either hidden in a remote location or moved through difficult terrain undetected remained a significant obstacle. The international aspect of the case presented legal and procedural challenges. Although an international arrest warrant was issued, the process of coordinating with foreign law enforcement agencies was complex and time-consuming. Each country has its own legal procedures and differences in how warrants are executed or evidence is handled, adding layers of difficulty to the investigation. For instance, if Javier had fled to a country with limited cooperation agreements or without an extradition treaty with France, bringing him to justice would be considerably more difficult. The lack of a digital footprint also hampered the investigation. Javier was carefully to avoid using credit cards, phones, or other traceable devices, which limited the investigator's ability to track his movements. Moreover, Javier's understanding of police procedures and his methodical approach to covering his tracks meant the investigators often found themselves one step behind. Another challenge was the sheer volume of tips and sightings, many of which turned out to be false or misleading. Each report has to be thoroughly investigated, which stretched the resources of the investigative teams and sometimes let them down fruitless paths. The need to verify every lead, no matter how improbable, further complicated the investigation. On a psychological level, understanding Javier's motives and state of mind also proved challenging. While financial difficulties and personal failure were likely factors, the religious and symbolic aspects of the crime suggested a deeper, more complex psychological profile. The complexity made it difficult for investigators to predict Javier's next moves or understand fully what drove him to commit such a calculated crime. The public and media's involvement in the case was both a boon and hindrance to the investigation. The shocking nature of the murders and Javier's mysterious disappearance quickly captured the public's attention, leading to widespread media coverage. So we're going to talk about some of the positive aspects of public involvement. The media played a crucial role in keeping the case in the spotlight, ensuring that Javier's face and details of the case remained well known across France and beyond. Widespread exposure led to a significant number of tips from the public, some of which provided valuable information that helped guide the investigation. The constant media coverage also put pressure on law enforcement to continue pursuing the case, preventing it from becoming a cold case as quickly as it might have otherwise. Public engagement was also high, with people actively sharing information, discussing theories, and even conducting amateur investigations. This level of involvement kept the case alive in the public consciousness, which could potentially lead to a breakthrough if someone with critical information came forward. However, the intense media attention also had its downsides. The flood of tips and sightings, while occasionally useful, often led to dead ends. Many of the sightings reported were either mistaken identity or outright hoaxes, which consumed valuable investigative resources. Media's need to keep the story alive also led to sensationalism, with some outlets focusing on less credible theories or turning the case into a spectacle, which could have muddied the waters and distracted from the serious work of investigation. Moreover, the public fascination with the case led to the spread of misinformation and conspiracy theories, some of which gained significant traction. These theories, ranging from Javier living as a hermit to his alleged involvement with secret organizations, added layers to confusion to the case and sometimes led to misguided searches or efforts by amateur sleuths. Technology has been a powerful tool and a source of frustration in the investigation into Javier Dupont de Ligonnès' disappearance. One of the primary technological tools employed was the use of surveillance cameras and facial recognition software. Following Javier's disappearance, law enforcement agencies scoured CCTV footage from key locations, including airports, train stations, and border crossings. Facial recognition software was used to analyze this footage, cross-referencing it with known images of Javier to identify possible matches. However, the sheer volume of data, coupled with the possibility that Javier might have altered his appearance, made this a daunting task. Despite these efforts, no conclusive sightings have been confirmed through this method. Forensic technology has also played a critical role in re-examining evidence. Advances in DNA analysis and forensic pathology have been applied to the bodies of the victims and the crime scene, helping to confirm the identities of the victims and rule out the involvement of any additional suspects. This technology allowed investigators to identify areas that might have been overlooked during initial searches and provide a more comprehensive understanding of the region's geography. By using GIS, investigators were able to model potential escape routes and identify locations where Javier might have sought refuge. However, despite these sophisticated tools, no definitive evidence of his whereabouts has been uncovered. In recent years, crowdsourcing and social media have emerged as important tools in cold cases, including the Dupont de Ligonnès investigation. Law enforcement agencies have increasingly turned to social media platforms to gather tips and information from the public. By leveraging the collective knowledge and reach of social media, investigators hope to uncover new leads or sightings. Platforms like X, Facebook, and Reddit have seen discussions and amateur investigations into the case, some of which have yielded new information. However, these efforts have also resulted in the spread of misinformation and conspiracy theories, which have complicated the investigation. As technology continues to advance, artificial intelligence and data mining techniques are being used to sift through the massive amounts of data collected over the course of the investigation. AI can analyze patterns, cross-reference tips and sightings, and even predict potential movements based on Javier's known behavior. Data mining tools are also used to identify connections between seemingly unrelated pieces of information, which could potentially lead to new breakthroughs in the case. In the years since the murders of the Dupont de Ligonnès family and Javier's subsequent disappearance, the case has seen periodic bursts of activity, often sparked by new tips, alleged sightings, or the discovery of potential evidence. However, despite these developments, the case remains shrouded in mystery, with no definitive breakthroughs. One of the most significant recent developments occurred in 2019, when a man was arrested at Glasgow Airport in Scotland After disembarking from a flight from Paris, the man bore a strong resemblance to Javier, and initial reports suggested that he might finally have been caught after years on the run. However, after a few days of intense speculation and media coverage, it was revealed that the man was not a Javier, but a French national with no connection to the case. This false alarm highlighted both the ongoing public interest in the case and the challenges law enforcement faces in verifying potential leads. Another notable incident involved the discovery of human remains in a French monastery in 2015. There was speculation that those remains might belong to Javier, who some theorized had taken refuge in a religious community given his deep Catholic faith. However, forensic tests ultimately ruled out this possibility, and the remains were determined to be unrelated to the case. Despite these setbacks, the investigation remains active. In 2021, French police announced that they were re-examining evidence from the original crime scene using the latest forensic technologies, including advanced DNA analysis techniques that were not available at the time of the initial investigation. This re-examination aims to uncover any new leads or clues that might have been overlooked. Additionally, investigators continue to receive and assess tips from the public, though most have not led to any significant developments. The manhunt for Javier Dupont de Ligonnès remains one of the longest-running and most high-profile in French history. Despite the lack of concrete evidence or confirmed sightings in recent years, law enforcement has not given up the search. French authorities continue to work closely with Interpol and law enforcement agencies across Europe and beyond to track down Javier. His profile remains in international databases, and border control agencies are alerted to any potential matches. Although the frequency of new tips has decreased over time, investigators are still consider any credible lead worth pursuing. Law enforcement officials believe that Javier's survival depends heavily on his ability to stay off the radar, using cash, avoiding digital footprints, and possibly living under an assumed identity. While this makes tracking him down extremely difficult, it also leaves room for human error, which could eventually lead to his capture. As a result, authorities maintain a watchful eye on regions where Javier might have fled, particularly in areas with large French expatriate communities or remote regions where he could live in seclusion. Some investigators have suggested that Javier might have received help from others, either from individuals close to him or through criminal networks. This possibility is one reason why the search remains active, as law enforcement continues to explore potential connection and assistance that Javier might have received to evade capture. As the years have passed, the DuPont case has taken on many characteristics of a cold case, though it has not been officially designated as such. Cold case typically refers to an investigation that remains open but has no active leads or significant new evidence. While the DuPont case remains unsolved, the ongoing interest and periodic developments have prevented it from being fully relegated to this status. The French authorities continue to keep the case open, and a dedicated team within the police force still monitors any new information that comes in. The team is responsible for following up on tips, re-examining old evidence, and coordinating with international agencies. The case is periodically reviewed, and new investigative techniques or technologies are applied to see if they can shed new light on Javier's whereabouts or the events leading up to the murders. However, the passage of time presents significant challenges. Witnesses' memories fade, potential physical evidence degrades, and the trail grows colder with each passing year. Despite these difficulties, the case remains a priority for French law enforcement, largely due to its high-profile nature and the ongoing public interest. If no new significant evidence or leads emerge, there is a possibility that the case could eventually be classified as a cold case in the official sense. This would mean that while the case file would remain open, active investigation efforts would be significantly scaled back, with the focus shifting to re-examining the case only if new information becomes available. However, given the international attention and the occasional developments that continue to arise, it is likely that the case will remain in a state of active investigation, albeit with diminishing resources. Dupont de Ligonnès' case had a profound impact on French society, shaking the nation's sense of safety and trust, particularly within the context of the family unit. The revelation that a seemingly normal, respected family could be the site of such a horrific crime struck a deep chord in the collective consciousness. The case brought to the forefront uncomfortable questions about the hidden stresses and potential dangers lurking behind closed doors, even in households that outwardly appear stable and prosperous. One of the most significant societal impacts of the case was the erosion of trust in the sanctity of the family. The idea that a father could murder his entire family and then vanish without a trace challenged the fundamental belief in the family as a safe and nurturing environment. It led to increased public awareness of the pressures that could build up within families, such as financial stress, social expectations, and the burden of maintaining appearances, which can sometimes lead to catastrophic outcomes. This case also highlighted the often unseen psychological struggles that individuals may face, even those who seem to have it all. The case also had a chilling effect on the public perception of personal safety. The fact that the murders were carried out so methodically with no outward signs of struggle or distress made people question how well they truly know their neighbors, friends, or even their own family members. This sense of unease was compounded by Javier's disappearance, which created a lingering fear that a dangerous individual was still at large, capable of evading even the most extensive manhunt. Moreover, the DuPont de Leganés case contributed to a broader discourse on the pressures of modern life in France, particularly for those who feel trapped by societal expectations. The case became a stark example of how the pressures to maintain a certain social status, coupled with financial difficulties and personal failures, can lead to tragic consequences. It sparked discussions on mental health, the stigma of financial failure, and the potential for these factors to drive individuals to extreme actions. The high-profile nature of the DuPont de Leganés case and the challenges it presented to law enforcement led to several reflections within the French police and judicial system, prompting discussions about potential reforms and changes in policy. One of the primary issues highlighted by the case was the need for improved coordination between different branches of law enforcement, both within France and internationally. The case underscored the difficulties in tracking a suspect across borders, particularly when the individual is highly skilled in avoiding detection. As a result, there's been an increased emphasis on enhancing collaboration between national police forces and international agencies like Interpol, as well as improving information sharing protocols across jurisdictions. The case also prompted a reevaluation of how missing persons and potential fugitives are tracked. While France already had a robust system for issuing alerts and coordinating searches, the DuPont de Leganés case exposed gaps in the ability to track individuals who actively evade digital and financial detection. This led to discussions about the need for more sophisticated tracking tools and the potential use of advanced technologies such as artificial intelligence and data analytics to analyze patterns of behavior and identify potential fugitives more effectively. Moreover, the case also had implications for how law enforcement handles media relations. The intense media scrutiny during the investigation highlighted the need for police to manage public expectations and the flow of information more effectively. This has led to more structured communication strategies, ensuring that accurate information is provided to the public without compromising the investigation. The DuPont de Leganés case remains one of the most perplexing and haunting mysteries in modern French history, with several unanswered questions that continue to captivate both investigators and the public. Chief among these is the question of where is Javier DuPont de Leganés today? Despite years of investigation, countless tips, and international efforts to track him down, his whereabouts remain unknown. The possibility that he had successfully eluded capture for over a decade, both alarming and baffling, leading many to wonder how he could have managed such a feat in the age of advanced surveillance and global communication. Another pressing question is why Javier chose to commit these murders. While there are theories ranging from financial desperation to psychological breakdown, the exact motive remains unclear. What drove a father to meticulously plan and execute the murder of his entire family and then vanish without a trace? Understanding his true motive is crucial not only for bringing closure to the case, but also for making sense of the seemingly senseless violence that shattered a family and shocked a nation. The methodical nature of the murders also raises questions about whether Javier had help. Did he act alone, or were there others involved who helped him carry out the killings or assisted in the disappearance? If so, who were they, and why have they remained silent for so long? These questions add another layer of complexity to an already convoluted case. Finally, there is the question of what really happened after Javier's last confirmed sighting. Did he commit suicide? And if so, why hasn't his body been found? Did he escape to another country, assuming a new identity? Or is he still hiding in plain sight, living a quiet life under an assumed name? The lack of concrete answers to these questions continues to haunt those who have followed the case from the beginning. The DuPont de Leganés case remains one of the most chilling and perplexing mysteries in modern French history. We've explored the horrific events that unfolded in April 2011 when Javier DuPont de Leganés allegedly murdered his entire family before vanishing without a trace. Despite extensive investigations, including forensic analysis, witness testimonies, and a nationwide manhunt, Javier's whereabouts remain unknown. The case has left us with more questions than answers. These lingering mysteries continue to haunt not only the investigators who have tirelessly pursued the truth, but also the public who remain captivated by the case's unresolved nature. Psychological complexities, the unanswered questions about potential accomplices, and the ongoing debate over whether Javier is still alive all contribute to the case's enduring fascination. So now I'm going to give you my personal thoughts on the case, my take on the most plausible theories. In my view, the most plausible explanation for Javier's actions lies in a combination of financial despair and psychological breakdown. The mounting pressure from his financial failures, coupled with a deep sense of personal inadequacy, may have driven Javier to believe that killing his family was the only way to protect them from future shame and suffering. The meticulous planning and execution of the murder suggests that this was not a crime of passion, rather a calculated decision made by someone who felt cornered by circumstances beyond his control. As for his disappearance, I lean towards the theory that Javier is still alive and living under an assumed identity. The lack of any conclusive evidence of his death, combined with his careful planning and knowledge of how to avoid detection, makes it seem like that he managed to escape and start a new life elsewhere. Whether he had help or acted alone in orchestrating his disappearance remains an open question, but it's clear that whoever he is today, he has successfully managed to stay one step ahead of law enforcement for over a decade. Now that we've covered the key aspects of the DuPont de Leganés case, I'd love to hear your thoughts. What do you think drove Javier to commit these murders? Do you believe he's still alive? And if so, where do you think he might be hiding? Or do you think he met a different fate? Share your theories and ideas in the comment section below. I'm curious to see how you interpret this baffling case. Your insights might even help shed new light on this enduring mystery. If you found this case as fascinating and unsettling as I did, be sure to stay tuned for more deep dives into some of the world's most intriguing unsolved and solved cases. In upcoming videos, we'll be exploring similar cases where individuals disappeared without a trace, leaving behind a trail of questions and speculations. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell so you don't miss out on these gripping cases. Thanks for watching, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts in the comments. Until next time, stay curious and keep questioning, because sometimes the truth is stranger than fiction. And if you want to support this channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. Your support helps go back into this channel, upgrade equipment, bring new hosts, be able to pay them, and hopefully one day take this show on the road. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
You have been listening to the True Crime Never Sleeps podcast. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on Facebook at True Crime Never Sleeps podcast and on Twitter at True Crime NS. And follow us on Instagram at True Crime Never Sleeps. Thanks for watching. If you want to support the show, buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS or become a patron at patreon.com/TrueCrimeNeverSleeps.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
While the world whizzes by, enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Horton's. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.